Okay, let's go ahead and get started. As we've been talking about the martyrdom of the prophet and what happened all around that, and then we're going to jump ahead a little bit because we know ultimately the saints are driven out of Nauvoo. And I was trying to think about how to be the best way to approach this, and the best way I think to do it is through eyewitness accounts. So I'm going to pick a single person to be the eyewitness of what happens next. But so I want to put a timeline on here just so you start thinking ahead. If we jump ahead to September 1845, this is a year after Joseph is killed, and the opposition is growing, it's getting worse. The little towns like Warsaw and Quincy and Carthage and even Keokuk and others are raising groups that are having group meetings. We want these guys out of here. And it's getting more and more contentious and more and more contentious. And the governor pulls Nauvoo's charter and they decommission the Nauvoo Legion and all of the writs of habeas corpus that they could use to, all of those are going away. And so they're just continuing to constrict and constrict and constrict. And it just is getting more problematic. To the point, little vignette on December 23rd, where they're finally doing work in the temple, they're trying to arrest Brigham Young. Now they're going after Brigham Young for whatever debts they can get on him. So they're trying to arrest him, and the constables pull up to the Nauvoo temple to arrest him while he's in the middle of doing temple work. And the wagon is waiting there. Out comes Brigham and four women around him, and they all get in the wagon and they drive off. The problem is that it wasn't Brigham. It was another guy that was dressed up like Brigham in his hat and in his cloak. And one of the four women was Porter Rockwell. And they don't figure that out till they get to Carthage. You know, so they're having to do all of this stuff. You just get a sense of how bad it is getting. So finally, the Quincy Resolution that was completed in Carthage in May of 1846 is that Brigham Young says, "Okay, we're leaving. The Saints will be leaving Nauvoo. We're going to leave in May of 1846." So we need to get through this next year, get through the winter, and then we're out of here. Okay. As we get into like December, Governor Ford, people are getting more angry. It is getting worse. And Governor Ford then lies to Brigham Young, and he says, "There is some resolution in this among the state legislature that if you guys don't leave, we might prevent you from leaving." And kind of hold you almost like a Indian reservation kind of thing, where you won't be able to leave. And so Brigham Young kind of panics a bit, and it worked, because he's like, okay, then we need to leave as soon as possible. So that is kind of where we are. That's why they're going to start leaving in February rather than waiting till May when it's okay. So in trying to decide then, what is the best way to kind of describe the atmosphere that's going on here? I was fortunate to run across a great journal. Let me do this. I want to step back into our history just a little bit, and remember the Joseph Knight family living in Colesville. And if we remember Joseph Knight is. Remember, in 1826, he hires Joseph Smith to work on his farm. Okay, so Joseph has just gotten married. He's already had his first experience with Moroni, but he doesn't yet have the plates. That's coming from another year later. So he hires Joseph to work on his farm. Yeah? New York. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's New York or Pennsylvania. It's right. It's not far from Harmony. It's maybe Pennsylvania. They might know. Okay, so
Google AI.
There we go. All right, so Joseph Knight is actually at the house in Palmyra, the white brick or the white frame house. When Joseph brings the plates back to the house, and he comes up to the back window, and he's going to hand the breastplates, what he has, through the window, and he's going to give them to Joseph Knight, because Joseph Knight had given him his wagon to go to Palmyra. So Joseph Knight is in the middle of all of this. Is it New York? Okay, so it's just barely over the line. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was New York, but I really, okay. Anyway, well, Joseph and Oliver are translating. They are running out of food, and Joseph Knight will bring a huge barrel of pickerel, fish, and food, and the paper that the original manuscript will be written on. So Joseph Knight and his entire family accepts the gospel. They're the first full family outside of Palmyra to accept the gospel. Okay? Now when we get to Nauvoo, he's 75, and that'll play a role here in a second. Newell Knight, his son, in 1826, he's just 5 years older than Joseph. He will be baptized in 1830, and he actually will lead the Colesville branch as kind of branch president. He will actually, when the Colesville branch moves to Missouri, Newell Knight will then help take them to a small town outside of Independence, and he will become the branch president in Missouri. Okay. He's on the Nauvoo High Council. He's also in the Zion High Council. He owns a sawmill. He did this in Missouri, and then he does this again in Nauvoo. He is the primary sawmill owner in Nauvoo. It's going to be the main asset that he has. And then he's going to work on, and then in the temple as well. So he will be involved in as a temple worker in Nauvoo. Okay. Now, one of the things I like about Newell, he's doing all of these things, but guess what? He's not in the Quorum of the Twelve. He's not in the Council of 50. He's not even in the Quorum of the Anointed. He is not practicing polygamy. He is, in some ways, he's like one of the regular guys almost outside of the church leadership. So we're seeing how kind of the regular outside the people that we would normally know. He then, one of the things that we have that's just incredibly powerful is that he wrote extensively in a journal, and he writes eloquently in this journal. So I kept trying to figure out how was I going to pull certain pieces from this journal, and I gave up. I just thought, well, I'll just show you the journal. Because so much of this is just so good.
Really good handwriting.
He's got great handwriting. Yeah. Yeah, I just copied. They got a transcript of it, and I just recorded it, and I just copied it. Okay, so January 1846. He says, "For the last 2 weeks, my time has been altogether taken up in laboring in the temple. It's expected that the time will be short, which the saints can have the privilege of receiving their endowments, as our enemies are prowling on every side like ravening wolves. And in fact, they've only been held at bay during the whole winter by the prayers of the saints. And the brethren generally have been faithful in laboring to build the temple, that the Lord might have a place prepared to which give the blessings and endow the saints with power from on high." Isn't that great? And then look at this. This is a great line. This is gold. "We attend the temple both day and night, and I can truly say it's better to be a waiter in the house of the Lord than enjoy the glittering wealth this world can afford." That great? "My soul has been filled with the love of God. I feel His Spirit burning within me day by day. The blessings I have received during this winter have doubly repaid me for all I have done towards building this house." Now remember, running the sawmill, he has employed Elijah Fordham, who carved the original wooden oxen underneath the baptismal font. So he's deeply involved. "I think the brethren generally feel in their hearts to say the Lord has not been slack, concerning his promises, for the power of the God is manifested in withholding our enemies from us. Okay? It's very touching. As I've been reading this, I just thought, wow, you just feel this. Now, so they're busy laboring in the temple. They know time is short. But the problem is that he's got other problems that he's dealing with at the same time. Here's one of them.
So, is there some sort of recommend process at that time?
It's interesting. Apparently they are calling people to do it, because he's going to talk about his dad has been called to come and get his sealing and his anointing. And so I don't know exactly how that process works, but apparently they're reaching out to people and say, you can now come do it. So he's doing this, but they also know they've got to get ready to leave. They're leaving, and he's going to say, in the meantime, I found it necessary in settling my temporal affairs. Because he's got debts. He's got things that need to be... Okay. Elijah Fordham insisted that he should have his pay so that he could be prepared for the move in the spring, although it should bring me to beggary. I told him that I did not believe in that principle. I did not think it my duty to take the last bit of bread from my children under the peculiar circumstances we were placed in, although I acknowledged he should have his due. But he had assisted us from his abundance and ought not to demand it of me in my poverty. Wow. So I get it. He should have his due, but if I pay him his due, I've got nothing. And really all he's got at this point is going to be, then he's going to say, if the Lord should prosper me in depositing of my property, the sawmill and my house, I should be able to satisfy him, but not all my creditors, who will be amply rewarded for waiting on me. Okay. So he's got, I want to do this temple work. I get it. It's burning inside of me, but I've got to take care of these temporal matters. So what he's going to do here, I think, is interesting. He agrees with Elijah Fordham, we'll have a hearing. You get your three witnesses, I will get three witnesses. We'll bring in together and we will abide. We will handle this in some judicious brethren. We'll abide by their decision. I told him I was not satisfied with the demand he'd made upon me, but as he had lost his accounts, I did not want to injure him and would rather pay him more than less I owed him, so long as it did not bring my family suffering. Okay, so what's going to happen here is there's a meeting coming up here, and it says Brother Fordham is going to choose Edward Hunter, Isaac Kigbee, and Bishop Hale as referees. I intended choosing some of the brethren of the High Council who were laboring in the temple, the same as myself, attending to the ordinances of the Lord's house. Now, listen to this. I was engaged there at the time that Brother Fordham called me and told me he was ready for the settlement. We're holding a meeting. You know, he's in the middle of help running an endowment session. And that the brethren at the place designated. It was inconvenient for any of us to leave, so I chose to go alone rather than hinder any of them in their duties. So rather than pull these guys out of the temple work that we're rushing to do, okay, I'll just go alone. Huge.
And it's not broadcast. I mean, he's very personal.
Yeah, and you're going to see that show up. He's got this big heart, and it actually hinders him quite a bit. So the short version of this is he enters the room, they're waiting, they talk about it, and then finally they decide... What's going to happen here? Brother Fordham insisted the referees he had on hand should give a decision. They decided that he should pay the above-mentioned Elijah Fordham $150 immediately and $100 more as soon as I could get some hereafter. That's about half of what Fordham was looking for, but he doesn't have the $150 either. But I'm going to try and take care of this, okay? So you just get this sense of all these things that are playing on his mind. Now, he's got another problem. And I think this is fascinating to me. So February 1st, this day a number of persons met at my father's, father being Joseph, This day, a number of persons met at my father's for the purpose of a family interview and to understand each other's feelings. Here's the problem. As father had been called upon to go the following day to the temple, Rick, this is where he's being called, to receive his sealing and anointing, my stepmother refused to be sealed to my father. Both Newell and Joseph had buried wives at Far West. And so Joseph Knight had remarried, but my stepmother was refusing to be sealed to my father. I took some pains to get the family together that we might know each other's feelings and understand the cause of my father and mother's separation, because she was going to leave. I arose and made a statement of my feelings and intentions, but also showed the necessity of such a separation being fully understood by all parties. She was going to leave, but they want us to be sealed. Okay, and Joseph wants to be sealed. The temple is operating. It's got to happen fast here. So here's Newell acting kind of like the branch president, but he's kind of, at this point, kind of the head patriarch of the family. So he's trying to solve this. Okay? Can you feel kind of all the things going on here? Okay? I called him on my father to express his feelings. He said he loved and respected Phoebe. But she wasn't satisfied to abide with him, and he had agreed to let her go. She wants to leave. I asked her the cause of her dissatisfaction. She said she respected the old gentleman, believed he was a good man, he'd ever been kind to her, and as good a man as she ever respected him, but did not love and honor him as her head and bosom companion. And for this reason alone, she was not satisfied to abide with my father. So now he's trying to do like marriage counseling in the middle of all of this. Okay. Now, so what's the problem here? What is going on? Well, he says, I told them I wanted to express their feelings towards me. And I didn't know why my feelings were thus impressed that I should be this particular, but the sequel will show. Mother Phoebe said she had no bad feelings towards me. She could find no fault in me. But for some reason, she was being affected by him. So she's going to say ultimately her feelings were to leave. So I should say amen and still respect her and wish her well. Okay. But remember, Joseph wants to be sealed. So if he's not going to be sealed to Phoebe, who should he be sealed to? His first wife. So now what do I do? Oh, okay. So my wife went home in company with Uncle. I took my horse and buggy and rode 9 miles out into the prairie to get my oldest sister, Anna DeMille, to go to the temple with my father and act as proxy for my mother, whose remains were the first of the saints in the earth opened. The earth opened the bosom to receive in Jackson County, Missouri. So if Phoebe doesn't want to stay with him, then I've got to go get Anna so that we can go to the temple and be sealed. Okay, that makes some sense.
So has this already been a pattern of sealing the deceased?
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense to us, of course, today. But they weren't doing the sealings for the. They weren't doing anything work for the dead in the temple.
Well, I believe that, except that I have in my great grandfather Arz's records that in the Nauvoo temple he was sealed to his parents. Which I'm not sure, because it seemed like we didn't really do that till we got to Utah. But there was something going on there that I don't completely understand.
Would that be considered, because it sounds like all the ordinances that were done for people who passed were directly connected to living people.
Yeah, and...
So the living person could get their ordinance.
Well, and here's the other thing. Right? And we know that Joseph's first wife was a believer. Because remember, the problem with being sealed to anybody is that you don't want to be sealed to somebody who didn't believe, because they passed into the next life and they're probably not going to accept the gospel. They weren't baptized. I'm not going to be sealed to somebody who wasn't baptized. I'm putting my whole eternity at risk. That's why for 50 years in the church, we were adopted to prophets rather than sealed to parents that hadn't joined the church. So he could actually be, he was okay being sealed to his first wife because he knew from Colesville that she was a believer.
No, it was Wilford Woodruff that straightened out this doctrinal.
Yeah, it's what, 1903, or not 19, it's like 1893, I think, where he gets the revelation to say, I'm directing all the temples to start being sealed to your parents and their parents, which was brand new. Stop being adopted, start being sealed. And the and his question was, how do I know they'll accept the gospel? And the Spirit says, they will. They will. Oh, well, all right then.
I remember reading, I think it was in Saints, that how people rejoiced when the doctrine first came out, and they quoted a woman's diary who said they were doing the work for the dead in the river. And that's long before.
Yeah, well, baptism for the dead. I mean, they were believed. We're we can baptize them for them, but when you start sealing families, because and we've mentioned this before. One of the writers said, like, if this is the altar of the temple, the belief was we are creating the celestial kingdom right here. When you are sealed and you're reaching across that altar and taking your companion's hand. What's happening is a welding link. You're being welded at that moment for eternity. So when we have other kids that are there and they're putting their hands on top of that, it's like you could break out the welder's arc and is now welded in here. So that's why even now we use the term, we're not going to dissolve a ceiling. In common parlance, we say we're doing what? Breaking the ceiling. You know, it's like we are undoing heaven. We're undoing the celestial kingdom on this anvil of the temple in a very literal sense. Does that make sense?
But when they cancel ceilings, they don't do it in the temple. They might do it in the temple, but it's an administrative function done by the first president.
Yeah, you're done. I know, but that's why sometimes, and I can't count over the years how many people that I've had come into my office counseling, and part of the fear is we're getting a divorce and my husband is breaking the ceiling. So the next question is, what about my kids? Because now you break that weld and the kids are like, you know, they're all just floating around now in the celestial ether space, unattached to anybody. Because that literal idea of what they were doing was so literal. And that's why even a question that came last night with the youth about what about Joseph Smith being sealed to all these wives. It's like, well, if I'm going to take your wife and I'm going to be sealed to her, even though you guys are married, I'm sealing the couple. I'm not really taking her as my wife. I'm sealing her to me so that I can be sealed to you as well. And, you know, and we look at it through present eyes and go, well, that's kind of weird. But back then, they were still trying to figure out how all this stuff works. Okay? All right. So now I got to go get Anna so that we can go to, so he can be sealed for my mother. Monday morning, took Sister Anna to the temple to meet my father according to the previous agreement. When father came, Phoebe was with him. Oh, and she wanted to talk to some of the 12. Oh. Uh-oh. I went to the usual labor in the temple until we were called into a council by Brigham Young, who stated to us that the Spirit had dictated it was time to commence our intended move into the wilderness and soon bring our labors to a close, to which all the council agreed. This is February 2nd. We got to leave. And Brigham Young will leave in about 3 weeks. He will leave it. About February 20th.
Kevin, can we back up just a minute?
Yeah.
You had shared how some people come into your counseling office with concerns.
Yeah, kids are unattached.
And the way that you shared it made me think it's possible for someone to believe that those concerns were legitimate rather than what they really felt. And so I'm just anticipating that maybe clarify for the group that's not the case and that actually happens is that the children go with whoever is the most appropriate.
Well, but at the end of the day, who are we really sealed to?
Sealed to the celestial kingdom.
That's right, to the spouse, and mainly to your eternal companion. But all of those that are, the sealing is a, they haven't lost not one blessing in the case of a divorce. They're sealed under the covenant of Abraham. Yeah, there's nothing lost here.
Nobody goes into the ether because somebody else goes south.
But you think about the depression, anxiety that sometimes spins out of that, that goes, oh my gosh, if we get a divorce, my kids are going to be lost. I mean, no, they're lost. They're not lost. They are, but that's that kind of literal thinking that we do. So thank you for.
Them.
Do they still have all the blessings of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob?
I guess I'm still looking at this
with
the
children or the spouses. Oh,
if God, if Jesus is going to save everybody by the end of the millennium,
absolutely,
then that healing might just come back together. I mean, that.
There's a lot of time by the time we get after this life about how some of those relationships will work through, but nobody's going to miss out on their exaltation because of things
they'll
that
go with somebody.
They'll be there, and you're right, they'll be with somebody. Yeah,
I'm going to be a rebel.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
But you want to stay together as a couple. Does the Lord just say, sorry, we separate you? And you can't?
Yeah, does that make sense?
And I know there's several. One explanation for that is that if you're of that type, you would accept the gospel and you would go to the special kingdom. Is that the concept?
Yeah, well, and not only that, what happens in on this earth life right now, and we're 1,000 years from now to have a lot of this stuff worked out, I don't see that as a problem. Yeah,
I mean, my perspective has been that even if you're in the celestial kingdom, if you are of a personality that wants to have a committed relationship with another person, God is not going to say, no, you can't have committed relationships with each other. He's just not going to do that.
Isn't that the thinking that all these people are having? Oh my goodness, I got to do this right.
They are. That's why I say at that level of understanding, first, it's new. Secondly, they're in, this is the 1800s, and they're very, very literal in creating and trying to create that heavenly thing. So, yeah, that's.
The other thing is I've always heard that it's not so much, you know, you need to bury the temple, but that doesn't create the seal. It's the Holy Spirit.
That's right. Right.
So just because you're married in the temple does not.
Right.
Does not guarantee.
Oh man, there's a lot of very non-celestial marriages that were performed in the temple, for sure.
I mean, wouldn't it be just for the third? We're going to be sealed in the third degree, right?
Whatever that is.
Whatever that is. I mean, if I've got to have my, if I only have my family. To get to the third degree of the celestial kingdom, do I have to be a god?
I know. See, and those are the questions we don't have. But let's just keep in mind: is anybody sealed? Is anybody exalted in the celestial kingdom on their own?
No.
It's all done in community. It's all done as families. It's all. In other words, there is nothing about the eternities that is individual in nature. It's not about I'll be worthy and I'll make it. It's no, I'm going to be there in a community in some kind of relationship. Yeah.
What if you're not married?
Yeah.
And never been married or never been.
Yeah.
Still in the temple. So when you die.
That happens.
But the brethren have taught us that no one, absolutely no one, will be denied
anything
eternal blessing.
Sure.
Because of the inaction of other individuals.
Isn't that true? See, and just, you know, from a, I don't know if this is absurd or anything, but I think about all of the wonderful, wonderful people that have ever lived. monks in the 14th century. You know, they're just all these great people that are out there, and all of those are going to have companionship going forward. So all that gets taken care of.
So we're going to be linked with someone we may not know?
Maybe.
You're going to be linked with somebody that you're compatible with.
And that you love.
Agreeable to. Even if you're sealed with somebody, we're sealed. If I'm a horse's hiney, and she goes, I don't want that kind of guy. Well, number one, I'm not going to make it to the celestial kingdom if I'm that kind of a person. But if she, for some reason, doesn't want me anymore, God's not going to say no.
You're stuck. You have no choice, right?
It's all by you all come by agency.
Yeah.
Nothing by force.
No. In fact, didn't we used to have I don't remember who it was. We used to have a Dallas Temple president that used to be very vocal about the idea that says, on Resurrection Day, we a lot of brethren jump up to get their wives, and the wives are going to go, no, sorry. I put up with you in earth life. I'm not going into the eternities. I still have a choice whether I decide that I'm with you.
So my aunt was concerned about, because my uncle might have been hard to love. And what, you know, I told her, I says, when you see him again, it's not that you won't recognize him, because you will recognize him, but he will be so much different.
Yeah,
and
I know.
It will all be improvements.
It'll all be improvements.
And you'll be more tolerant.
Okay, so let yes. Okay. So what happens here? Well, Phoebe comes with him, with Joseph. She wants to talk to the 12. We went to attend our labor. He gets a little side note. Oh, by the way, we're leaving soon. Oh, man, I got to hurry and get my stuff done. About this time the council closed, one of the 12 came to me and said that Phoebe had agreed to be sealed to my father, providing my opposition to her would cease. I told the 12 she was willing to be sealed to the old gentleman, but not by one of his children. Okay, I won't do the sealing. Okay, I'll step back. I replied I'd never oppressed her, but if they were agreed, I shouldn't hinder their union. Then he puts this in here. But the reader can better judge to describe my feelings on hearing the above statement after what transpired yesterday. Suffice to say, they were sealed and received their anointing. Okay, so, all right. I don't know what's going on here with Phoebe, but we're good.
She didn't want to be sealed by her stepson?
Yeah, that he would perform the sealing. He'd perform the ordinance. I mean, she's still going to be sealed to Joseph Knight. She just didn't want him acting as the officiator. Okay.
So that was just talking then about
Newell? Uh-huh. Yeah, she didn't want Newell. She didn't want Newell. She did. Yeah, she keeps saying, I don't, but when it comes down to it, she just doesn't want him to do it. And he's like, I don't know what's going on with her, but okie dokie.
So that's why he asked about what her feelings
were. Yeah, he's trying to figure out, what's going on here? Okay, now, real quickly, I need you to see what's going on here. All right, so what he's going to try and do here is he's trying to sell his property. That's why I say I'm jumping around a little bit. I apologize for this. And then he's going to get up the next morning to go and see someone's going to buy the mill. He accomplishes a trade, and he sells his mill. But a man by the name of Matthews had formerly belonged to the church but had turned away. He got up a false report account and followed with a constable who was a friend of the enemies of the church and who attached a good horse I'd taken from the man who bought the mills. He got a good horse, and then it's taken away from him by falseness. I arrived late that night. I found the brethren busily engaged preparing for the journey. Okay, so... And you're going to see that there's a pattern. He keeps trying to leave town, and every time he's trying to leave town, the constables are showing up. Somebody's looking for money. February 6th, he gets the deed on the house, barn, and so forth, made over to Joseph Andrus. Okay? Now, he's going to go over to get his get the oxen, cows, wagons, property I'd taken. I paid off Elijah Fordham. In the meantime, my wife, and this is, pay attention, this is February 9th. In the meantime, my wife is busily engaged for the journey. She got our temple wagon cloth stock cattle all in readiness, provisions, good packed. We're ready to go. February 6th, we're going to, or February 9th, which is amazing. I think I've told the story. Oh, wow, we're going to run out of time. When I took my son McKay to Nauvoo, which I did before each one, I had three sons, and I took them all to Nauvoo before we went on, they went on their missions. McKay left in February, so he and I go to Nauvoo the first week of February to go through the temple and to visit Nauvoo. He hadn't been to Nauvoo. And man, did we hit a snowstorm, big time snowstorm. It's hard to even get from our hotel in Keokuk over to Carthage. It was a mess. Yeah, I had to open the door with a blow dryer trying to get it open. But anyway, as we're driving across, I'm watching chunks of ice floating across the Mississippi. And I realized this is the same time that the saints, this is the weather they were leaving in. It's cold, it's snowy, it's really cold. It can be really moist and muggy, as you know, in Nauvoo. So, but it's February 9th. We're going to head off with Brigham Young. Oh, and then Hiram Kimball shows up. I think he was still a non-member at this time. In fact, I think he was. I think we looked at him and said he was not yet a member. It was his wife, Sarah Kimball, that had actually been the impetus behind the Relief Society because she wanted to sew some clothes for the temple workers. And he's going to make some cases against him. And then he says, as law and justice were out of the power of a Mormon at this time, there was no alternative for me. Although justice had taken place, no justice had taken place, I should have recovered damages from him. So what he does, he attached my teams and wagons, which hindered me from present on the journey. Okay, I used my best, my endeavors. So it's on the 13th of February. Kimball attached my property. It was the best I could do. I had sacrificed property that had allowed $200 in the trade of my mills to satisfy his demand. And then he has some not great things to say about Kimball. He was a poor man or bankrupt. And he just is not real happy with him. But I need you to see the things that are going on, just trying to get out of town. April, I now saw my creditor satisfied and again began to calculate and arrange what little I had left to the best advantage for the journey. I could only fit myself with two wagons, three yoke of oxen, and three cows. My family consisted of nine persons, myself, wife, five sons, two daughters, besides the widow Edwards, an aged sister who had lived with my family for some time. So in this big-heartedness, his household is hanging on to a widow that wasn't his. Okay? Now, watch the jump, because he's going to say, because of this trade, it has detained me until April. Remember, it's February 6th when his wife is packing up. It's now April. I saw my cat. So here's where I am. So now it's April. We should be able to get out of here, right? Oh, no. April 8th. My wagons and all things were now ready to start the journey. But he has one more problem. And it's the problem that really plagued Nauvoo big time. That's why I wanted you to read this. It seems that I cannot go and leave all my kindred. Some of my cousins called on me this morning, said they knew no way they could move. They could not bear the idea of my going and leaving them, as they were my children, as were in the gospel. They were among the first, or nearly so, that embraced the gospel in this kingdom in these last days, were led by me in the first branch of the saints that immigrated to Jackson County. This is a former branch president, former bishop, that has these people that had trusted him and saw them as his leader, and they are now poor and destitute, and so how do I lead them? And he says, my heart yearned over them. Just, what do I do about these guys? We've got a real problem here. And remember, by April, Brigham Young and the First Vanguards have left. They're now slogging their way through the mud of Iowa. They're left. And the temple's shut down. And now it's just, we're trying to get out of here. Look at what he does here. I ask God to give me wisdom that whereby a scheme might be devised for their good. What do we do about the poor stuck in Nauvoo? April 9th, I went to Benjamin Slade's, my cousin's, and then he went to Freeborn DeMille's, which is his brother-in-law. Found them all anxious to go west, but they had little to prepare for such a journey as they were among the first saints that accepted the gospel and had been robbed and driven from time to time by our enemies. Now, he's going to make a point here that says one of the reasons why they were poor is they and the rest of the saints were obliged to flee from Jackson County in 1833. Then they were obliged to leave many of their efforts and necessities of life. And we, by our industry, had accumulated for the comfort and convenience of our families to gather the hardships. And so now they finally made it to Illinois. But they're still poor. Everything has been left behind. They haven't had time long enough to obtain things, okay? And so the constant moves have just left them bereft. Leaving the state of Missouri in the cold, dreary winter of 1838 in common with the saints had greatly impaired our constitutions. And I think he means their health, but I think he also means their wealth. So that we had not that strength to labor and accumulate the things of this life as we'd once had. So I get it. I'm barely making it out, but I had a sawmill. They don't have that. Okay. But why are they going to then push? Listen to this. Wow. Yet the pleasing prospect of getting beyond the tyranny and oppression of our enemies and from the banner of the Constitution, so deeply stained with the blood of innocence, from the soil that was already crimson with the blood of martyred prophets, and from the air that had been so rent with cries and mournings of the bereaved widow, the orphan of the aged father, the broken-hearted mother for the loss of her child, with virgin sighs and the grief of thousands of fair sons and daughters of this people. Yea, I say the hope of finding asylum for the oppressed, although it should be in the wilderness among the red man of the forest or the lone valley of the mountains, buoyed our spirits and seemed to nerve us with youthful vigor. You hear that? As hard as this is, the idea of finally getting outside our oppressors is huge. And I, you know, just you read this, it just tears at your heart. But the problem is, Brother DeMille, his brother-in-law, says he was ready to enter into any measures that might be advisable. And after some conversation, I told them the best and only measures I could devise were the following. Okay, let me hop ahead here. Here's the proposal he's going to make to the poor, his family members, and the poor. It's going to be this. Oops. I shall first propose that all our most able men and teams take their farming tools, seeds of all kinds and grain, and as many families as shall be expedient at the time, go as far as possible to a resting place, which will probably not exceed 200 miles, and put in crops at the earliest moment. So what is it that he's proposing that they do?
Winter quarters.
Yeah, well, even before they get to winter quarters.
Just get out of the region
as possible. Yeah, this is going to be Mount Pisgah. Okay, what's going to happen? If we can get 200 miles out, you guys can't bring food with you, but we're going to go 200 miles out. If you can wait a few months, you'll be able to get out there 200 miles. We will be growing crops out there on the prairie that we will then leave for you. We'll plant them and then we'll move on. Okay. Not to exceed 200 miles. While some few of our older men stay to take charge of the family. So we're going to leave some people behind and leave them with team sufficient so that they will can settle their affairs, make necessary preparations they can, that they can all be moved across the Mississippi. Or the great father of waters, if they decided to take a ship. And then we're going to bid farewell for a season. So we're going to take the strongest. Most of us, we're going to go out, we're going to plant crops. You guys can follow. We'll leave a few good people behind. Okay? And then, I just love the way he puts this. And there can be in readiness, embarking on board. Not our splendid ships, but he says, we can leave some to tend the crops and others to embark aboard our plane. Yet, he's selling here. We will tend the crops. Well, those that are waiting to embark upon our plain yet safe and commodious common wagons drawn by oxen, save now and then a few horses and miles, where we expect to be hid up for a little season while the indignation of the Lord passes over. We just got to get out of Nauvoo. We're not exactly sure where all we're going. Again, Brigham Young and the 12 have left, and here we are. Now, here's his sacrifice. If you'll agree to these proposals, I will abandon the idea of crossing the mountains this year. Though I have made every arrangement to this effect, I will use all my means and efforts to assist you in moving to a place of safety. Oh. My friends appeared satisfied, and they only believed the above measures the best that could be devised and the only way that some of them could be comfortably removed and sustained. I left them to determine the matter and returned home. As the day was pretty far spent, I told my wife the arrangements we had made, notwithstanding it was a disappointment to her and would probably involve us in many inconveniences, which we should avoid by making our journey to the mountains this year. We have the ability to follow Brigham and make it to the mountains this year, if we'll go. But if we're going to do this, he's sacrificing that to take care of the poor that are trying to figure out a way to make it. Wow. And she cheerfully consented.
That's tremendous trustworthiness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I just think he feels such a responsibility.
All these people feel like they're going to die if they stay.
Yeah. Well, and we'll talk about it, that was a real possibility. And I'll show you that in a second. Because they knew how angry and how bad the mobs were. Okay, he's gonna give you some information about how they're gonna give them some, make sure they got seed and grain, and they're gonna leave some wagons, and then he says, "We parted. I went home with a sorrowful heart, reflecting upon the situation of my friends. For I knew if everyone went his way, they would bring suffering upon themselves, and it might be a long time before they would all find a resting place with the saints. But I had done all I could do. Nothing more but commit them to the hands of our great Creator, who holds the destinies of all men."
So did his wife go with him?
Uh-huh. But he had to leave behind his sister, the DeMilles. He has to leave behind his dad. He has to leave behind the people that had trusted him in Missouri. Listen to this. April 13th. I went to the temple with my wife and children to take our last view and farewell of that noble and magnificent building, which will stand as a monument of everlasting honor to the saints who labored with all their diligence to build it, that the Lord might have a house to his name in this place and endow his saints with power on high, which he had done in his holy temple, which righteous temple and city they are obliged to leave for the present, which will stand as a testimony against this nation. Whew. You can kind of hear his heart at this moment.
Did the temple still stand after they left, or did the people out of their hatred tear it down?
They will desecrate it. There'll be a small fire. And then 2 years later, a tornado will knock it down. Yeah. April 14th, I covered my wagons and got all ready to leave them for the journey. But Brother DeMille comes to me. He had need of lumber to make a box, you know, and I told him with his might to get ready as possible, and he went his way, you know, and it's just like he's leaving and these people are panicking. April 15th, I went to the ferry to see if I could cross. April 16th, the wind blew. I took my ox and wagon, helped get them across. Today, the governor's troops are in our city prowling about like demons in human form, claims on Brother Brigham's property. They took his cattle and wagons and drove them to Carthage. 17th, so they're just nipping at his heels. The morning is clear and calm. I rose before day. I, with my family, committed ourselves, bade farewell to our comfortable home with all our earthly possessions, save the little we took with us. April 18th, finally. Remember, he was going to leave February 6th. Just as the sun began to dawn upon us, we found ourselves safely on board the ferry with all of our effects and bade farewell to the shores of our beloved city. The day is, he crosses back over the river to take care of a couple of things. I went over on the boat and once more had the satisfaction of walking through the streets of the city of Joseph. Remember, they changed the name from Nauvoo to the city of Joseph when the charter was revoked. And beholding great works that so nobly reared and laid the foundation before his martyrdom. He gets back, one of his oxen are gone. April 23rd, one of my oxen are gone. We're obliged to tarry all day in search of him. I had taken so much for DeMille, my brother-in-law. My team could not haul it. I tried to get another yoke of cattle, but could not. I found an opportunity to buy a horse and pay his property as I could by sacrificing the one. I did it. So finally we get this. I missed this.
Did he have a horse and an ox yoked together?
Apparently. Seems to be. I mean, they're just doing... I know.
Did they think that 200 miles was close to halfway?
Oh, no. It's just we have to get far enough away from these mobsters to plant something because we know we're not even going to be close. But we've got to get the poor out of Nauvoo.
It was out of U.S. territory.
We just got to get out of the United States.
So were they thinking that when they got 200 miles to these crops that they had planted, that they would be able to abundantly fill their wagons to make it to the next...
Wait long enough, get there, grow, finish the crops, harvest the crops, then they would have the ability to get where they're going.
Just from something that I had researched... In teaching genealogy, a horse was the most expensive way because you had to take a lot of grain for a horse. A horse would languish and die.
Yeah.
Ox
will eat anything. Yeah.
Mules would be second, but they're very sure-footed and they take less care and less grain. But the oxen could eat anything practically, but they're slow.
Yeah.
But they're... Even a child can drive
oxen. Yeah, because they'll just move. Okay, so look. So listen to this. And again, this is part of the beauty of Newell's journal is the way he sees things. 24th of April, we left the Mississippi River about noon. We ascended the bluff, so we'd be coming up on top of Montrose, probably that area up there, directly across. Here we all halted and took a farewell view of our delightful city that we had seen and helped to rear even from its infancy. We also beheld the magnificent temple, rearing its lofty tower towards the heavens, which speaks volumes in honor of the wisdom and greatness of our martyred prophet, who is the founder of this magnificent temple, as well as the perseverance, economy, and industry of the saints who had to labor with the sword in one hand and their tools in the other since the commencement of this noble house. We took farewell of our comfortable homes we had labored so hard to rear for the comfort of our families. While beholding and pondered all this, I felt to express gratitude of my heart to our Heavenly Father that we had thus had on our journey. I felt my dependence upon God, asked His protecting care to be over us on our journey. Tried to picture what that would look like as he's that one last look. And yet my heart did swell within me because of the things which I beheld. For beheld with one glance of the eye from the eminence from where I stood, the noble works of Joseph the prophet and seer and Hiram the patriarch, with whom I had been acquainted with even from their boyhood. I knew their worth and mourned their loss. I had also seen their martyred, mangled bodies, and knew that now they lay in yonder silent resting place, moldering back to dust, and the hands yet reeking with their blood were now arrayed against the saints. Wow. All right. So, and then there's a long prayer here that he prays to the Lord. And then I just want to point this out, and then we'll, then let me kind of show you the aftermath. And wilt thou, O God, the eternal Father, bless the poor among the saints, the widow and the fatherless. Send men from the north and the south and the east and the west to buy their houses, their land, their furniture, and all that's in the left of the committee for the benefit of the needy saints. That thy people may be provided with teams and wagons, provisions and clothing, every needful thing for their journey. Wilt thou remember in much mercy my aged father? Okay. All right. So he's going to do that. He'll make it to Mount Pisgah. But I guess the sad footnote to this is that he dies in January. And his father will die in February. He dies at Mount Pisgah. And his father will die at winter quarters after all that they have been through. Okay. You just kind of get a sense of this gentle heart. They did. He was able to get those crops in, and then in trying to move forward, he gets pneumonia in January and dies.
So did people that wanted to get out then?
Hold on to that. No, they didn't.
I'll have to look back in journals, but what I've always heard is I had an ancestor that was there with the Fulmer. That was
Elijah Fulmer?
And he stayed behind to help try to sell and get money to help them.
Yeah, let's finish with that. No, I didn't put that in. Here's what's going to happen there. Oops. What's going to happen here is that the poor can't get out. Most saints have left. There's about 1,500 saints left in Nauvoo, and they haven't left. So in September, a year after the Quincy things, September 1846, the mob attacks. They have about 3,000 troops. They come down the main street of Mulholland. It's almost like Les Miserables. They build a barricade there halfway through Mulholland Street. They bring cannons. They're firing cannons around into Nauvoo. The brethren have, the last defenders of Nauvoo have at least two cannon that we know of. One that they made from a steamship shaft, and another that they had brought from New Orleans that they had pulled out of the ocean and brought and refurbished in the basement of the Nauvoo Temple. So they had, and they would go get whatever little iron they could, and they would fire that off from time to time to hold them at bay. And so for 3 days in September, there's a raging battle up and down Mulholland Street. Finally, after 3 days, they acquiesce, they give in, the mob pours in, and they push the remaining 1,500 people down to the river, and then push them across the river where they end up on the bank of Montrose, just out of the sight, but looking across the river and seeing the fires going on and the screaming and yelling and the drunkenness. It's a pretty bad situation. Okay. So most of the poor, I was thinking in some ways about the, when we went down to New Orleans after Katrina to do the cleanup, and as the hurricane was coming in, there were a lot of people that were able to leave New Orleans and drive out of there. But the poorest of the poor in New Orleans, in those lower sections that we had to go into, they couldn't get out. So they just had to stay and hope for something. And they're the ones that ended up on top of the houses and ended up in the Superdome and all the bad things that happened in the Superdome. The poorest of the poor under something like this can't get out. And these guys couldn't. They'd been driven one too many times. Yeah, the poor end up kind of getting the bad end of this, yeah. And in some ways, as I was reading through kind of what happened here, it really does parallel pretty closely what happened in Far West during the sack of Far West by the mobs. What happens in Nauvoo is pretty parallel to that, as the way they were treated and what they did and all of that. So. Yeah, yeah. Because remember, this happens in this is September 1846, and we'll talk more about this next week. But when Brigham Young is going to make it to Utah in July of 1847, the Mormon battalion has left winter quarters. One of the promises that Brigham Young had made to these strong families that were going to go back and get the poor is that some of these 500 guys that were part of the battalion, including, again, my pioneer grandfather, is that we will go get your families. We'll go get them. And when he comes back in September of 1847 and he gets back to winter quarters, and he finds out that these guys are still sitting on, a year later, on the bank of the Mississippi outside of Nauvoo, he explodes. He just goes crazy and sends missionaries streaming back to Nauvoo to go get what he calls the family of the battalion boys. The families of the battalion boys. We told the battalion boys we'd take care of their families. And they're still sitting in Mount Pisgah, and they're still sitting in Montrose, and they're sitting in squalid situations. We'll go get them. So for some of them, they went out to Salt Lake, they come back to winter quarters, and they keep on going back to Nauvoo to bring these poor families forward. Yeah, because that's going to be, this sets up two things. It sets up the classic battle, I'll call it a battle, between Brigham and Parley, the Prairie Council. Hey, we're making good ground. You know, we got 1,500 people here. Where's the poor? They're coming. Brigham goes crazy. And then the other is the Canesville Conference that will determine whether there's a first presidency or not and why there's a need for first presidency after the way the poor were treated.
What about the people that were sent out 200 miles away? Did they get picked up?
Yeah, a lot of those, they were finally able to get it, and then they make it to winter quarters. But there's a lot of deaths at winter quarters. Winter quarters was like kind of the halfway place. This is where we're going to wait the winter. And then when the spring comes again, then we're going to make it, then we will all go out to Salt Lake.
And they also planted crops there.
They did in both places.
That was a typical move that throughout the country or any place, whenever the men go, they plant the crops and then they make shelters and then they bring their families.
That's right. Yeah,
did
but
everyone have a map of how to get to Utah?
No.
No.
It's out there somewhere. And it's out there somewhere. We think it's the Great Basin. Brigham Young has seen a vision of a mountain. He'll know it when he sees it. But he hasn't seen it yet. But we might go to California. We might go to Vancouver Island.
But there was no pillar of fire.
No, but there was a mountain Ensign Peak. Yeah. Well, there was a general there. They were able to kind of get up near the Oregon Trail, so that's going to take them across Wyoming. So it's but it's not very clearly.
There were maps. There were half a dozen different individuals who had made maps.
Lewis and Clark.
Lewis and Clark had made
maps. Yeah.
And a couple others had made maps. The
and
people.
Forgers made maps.
Most of the people who made maps did not publish hundreds of the maps. They may have published a few. Most of the people who made maps originally were not map makers. There were surveyors and map makers who came along later and made more accurate maps, but the maps were more along the lines of you see landmarks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like a treasure hunt.
But it's not like maps today.
No, no, no. Some made by trappers.
But after a while, you can see the trail.
Yeah. And you still can.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going near Rawlings, Wyoming, you can still see the wagon ruts. I mean, you just.
My great great grandfather, Miles Romney, was in Nauvoo, and he was a poor sharecropper. And he left Nauvoo and went to St. Louis before all of this happened.
Oh, okay.
Because he didn't have any money, and St. Louis at the time was a town that was very wealthy, liberal. It was accepting of everyone.
Yeah.
And so he was there for a year working until he could get a wagon and supplies. And I don't know why he left, but he did. He was in California at the same place.
They're scattering in all directions, yeah. And we're not even talking about those that get grabbed by James Strange and taken to Wisconsin. We'll talk about that next week as well. So.
I wanted to say something about the Knight family.
Yeah.
I grew up here, and I got my patriarchal blessing from Henry Knight, who somebody else in the room may have a blessing from. And this really, my blessing is very clear to me. It's so well written, and I know that because I used to type blessings for the patriarch.
Yeah.
And some of them, I'm going, all these poor people, because, you know, you could, it was just, sentences were this long sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And so how do you get the meaning when there should have been some and commas? I found that very difficult to even.
Newell is so eloquent.
Well, Henry Knight gave me my blessing, and I guess that's who gave you your blessing. He was very, very concise and very to the point. And this just reading his journal, I really appreciate this.
Isn't it amazing?
It makes me more appreciative of my blessing than ever.
Yeah, well, probably wouldn't be. You can Google the this is out there. This isn't hard to find.
So you can find this then?
Easily. Yeah. If you can't find it, let me know. I can text it to anybody.
I'm thankful you for telling us about this man because of the integrity.
Oh, he's amazing.
That obviously runs in that family.
Well, and not only that, and how many Newell Knights were on that, were streaming out of Nauvoo, those kind of people. So, all right. Well, final questions on any of this? To me, the whole thing is heartbreaking. Now we get into the journey across. But again, we come from hardy stock. We've kind of talked several times about the fact that our theology is not our history, though we have for years made our history our theology. But our history is our history, and it is who we are. It's our shared experience about who we are as Latter-day Saints. And these are the people we're following. I'll just finish with this. I have never, almost always, if we're in Nauvoo, one of the first places that I go to is up at the top of Parley Street and into the old burial ground, because these are the people I want to be around. And I just am inspired by that. And that's where I'd always take my sons was up there. And even when we've taken LDS groups on tours, I would get them to the old burial ground because this is where I want them to be. I spoke at a singles conference a few years ago in Nauvoo, and I called those people and said, I want to do an early morning fireside in the old burial ground. They weren't even aware of it. They were willing to do it. So everybody showed up in their heavy coats and everything. It was really cold that day. And we did a little fireside there next to Noel K. Whitney's great headstone, or Edward Partridge is up there. Yeah. But anyway, these are our people, and I just think we can't love them enough. So I leave that with you in Jesus' name. Okay, can we get a closing prayer? I usually pick on you, just because you do well at it.
Our Father in heaven.